CAPSI Podcast Series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Welcome to yet another episode on Conversations on African Philanthropy with me, Pegginko Simoyo, the Director of the Center on African Philanthropy and Social Investment. This is a very, very special episode. I'm rejoining with my old-time friend, Johnny Ulanga. John and I have known each other for years and years, but we are shooting this at the margins of the East Africa Philanthropy Network Conference here in Zanzibar. John, welcome to the Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. John is the Regional Director for East and Central Africa, trademark East Africa. John, I was realizing now and reading through your profile that when you were the chairperson of the East Africa Grantmakers Association, which is now the East Africa Philanthropy Network, you actually introduced the concept of the annual conferences.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Here we are.
Absolutely.
You know, after several years,
absolutely.
And the network has grown in leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
Maybe we could start there and just have a reflection on the growth of this network over this period of time.
No, first, as I've rightly said, being in Zanzibar this week has really given me an appreciation of the journey we have come from, journey we have traveled. 15 years ago, when I was the chair of the then East African Association of Grantmakers, I remember I joined. We had only 8 members in the region. When I finished my term, we had 24 members. But during that period, one of the things we discussed as board, as membership, was the need to come together in regular, if possible, annual convenings to share experiences, share knowledge, share best practices, but also invite people from beyond the region. So now we are attending the 8th conference. We are having 300 participants from across diverse range of organizations around philanthropy in Africa and beyond Africa. It really shows that there has been a massive increase of appreciation of the concept, the contribution that the philanthropy sector is making in the continent, but also the fact that philanthropy in Africa is part of our DNA.
Yeah.
You listen to these conversations, you really appreciate that philanthropy is really making a difference in the continent.
Yeah. And of course, before coming here, as I was preparing, I asked for, to speak to Evans to just check, the magnitude of the conference, but also who is coming, and I looked at the participation list.
Absolutely.
I almost fell off my chair.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm looking at people who have already registered and confirmed over 300
Absolutely.
Participants.
Absolutely.
And like you're saying, when you look back 15 years ago, this was something that we would not have imagined.
Absolutely.
And saying that, I also remember that you were doing that at the time when we were the executive director of the Foundation
for
Civil Society.
Absolutely.
And so there have been so many of these, I think, places where you've been. But I want us to also talk about your time as the chief executive of the Foundation for Civil Society. And that's several years ago, but most of us still fondly remember the role that you played there. Maybe we could summarize some of the achievements and some of the maybe even barriers that you might have faced during your time, but leading to some of these successes. And I would want us to link that to the formation of the African Grantmakers Network,
Absolutely.
Which is now the
Absolutely.
Africa Philanthropy Network.
Absolutely. Yes, rightly so. When I was the executive director of the Foundation for Civil Society for a period of 9 years, and now looking back, I have realized when I joined, that was just the time that the East African Association of Grantmakers was probably established, like 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
But my role at the foundation was first to increase the visibility and the appreciation of the role of civil society in bringing about development in the continent. Of course, my mandate was around Tanzania, but then also reuse that also as a case study for other parts of the continent. So I used my role to increase the appreciation, spend a lot of time to build capacity of small community-based organizations, small civil society organizations, NGOs of different types, and bringing them together and collectively appreciate what they can do in terms of contributing to socioeconomic development of the community. But then also realize we cannot succeed if we operate in silos. So I also spend a lot of time to network, to making sure that service for the foundation becomes also part of this greater network. So the engagements that we are doing with yourselves and others. And as you've rightly said, so we realize that if we were invited a lot, African organizations were invited a lot to Europe, to US, either EFC or other conferences in the US, but not in Africa. So I think one of the things that I'm still very proud to date is the ideas when we came together, and I think we had these ideas when we met outside the continent of saying, why are we not coming up together as African grant makers to also come together as a network, utilize the common knowledge that we have, identifying synergies, but also start coming up with best practices, research on best practices, publish those best practices, and making sure they can be replicated. And now, looking at the African Philanthropy Network, you realize, wow, a small seed that was planted many years ago again has established something very, 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 very important, and we can all be proud of.
Yeah, I always tell the colleagues at the center that when the Africa Grantmakers Network was established in Accra, there were several pillars to it. One was obviously the platform for peer learning. The other was, you know, the idea that would then have a chair on philanthropy. And that chair is what now is the center.
The center.
Which is CAPSE. And so this journey has been so fascinating. And for me, reconnecting with people who were there at the beginning is fascinating. And so I was really pleased to see you today and having this conversation with you.
But I've also been very pleased. Of course, I've been monitoring you over. We can only be successful, and we'll only be as successful as we've been because of the commitment people like yourselves have had. You see, because it was not about any remuneration, any promise of big funding, but the commitment to stay the course and ensuring that Africa philanthropy is appreciated, is researched. You have now, as I said, now you have this center, really, which becomes like a center of excellence, center of knowledge, where we can come for either this repository, you see, come for consultation. So, and I think if we continue this way in the next decade, African philanthropy will really take the shape that it deserves to take.
Because
as I've rightly said, I mean, as I've said earlier, philanthropy in Africa is part of our DNA. You know, I'm saying this respectfully.
Yeah.
In other parts of the world, being philanthropic means you're doing a favor to other people.
Yeah.
In Africa, being philanthropic is being responsible. You actually, if you're not philanthropic, you are considered as an irresponsible human being.
Yeah.
You see, for you, people expect you not only to cater for the needs of your immediate family, they will expect you to, at minimum, cater for the needs of your immediate community.
Right.
You see?
Right.
And
right.
It is your responsibility. Yeah. And that's what African philanthropy is all about.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about something that is very dear to me, and I know to you as well, as one of the, you know, I would say one of the recognized leaders in the region and also in Africa. Succession planning.
Sure.
Probably you are one of the very few institutions that managed to have a properly managed succession plan where you actually handed over to somebody and the institution remained intact.
Absolutely.
It never happens that way most of the times.
Absolutely.
And I want us to maybe, you know, using your experience but also your leadership insights to address this issue of succession and leadership, especially in the nonprofit world.
And this is a tricky discussion, but needs to be held.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the sessions I was in, a participant asked the question around succession planning. If you ask me, I requested my board at the Foundation for Civil Society that after I finish my term, which by then was like for 9 years, of 3 years. I begged the board that I would want to not to continue.
Right.
And I informed the board a year in advance, saying I'm giving a 1 year notice that I would not like to renew. And not because I'm not happy, I was actually super happy belonging to this community. I was contented, but I said for the health of this organization, we need to create a culture of smooth transition. You see, you need to create a culture where you do not become too comfortable, you see, because of course, after many years, that becomes a comfort zone. Now, that, and not everyone would agree with you. Even your board will question that, is it necessary, you're a good leader? But I think as African leaders, especially leaders in philanthropic organizations, we need to have conversations on what are our succession planning processes.
Yeah.
How long do you want to serve? You see, and it's not easy to be honest. We always tell governments that you need to have term limits, but it's not easy to set term limits in our own organization. So I think we need to have this conversation and have examples.
Yeah.
And once you have examples, which will give people confidence that you can live. When I was leaving the Foundation for Civil Society, I didn't have a job. But I say it is not about me. It's about the organization. Whether I'm going to have a job or not, that's besides the point. Yeah. The point is the Foundation for Civil Society needs to have a new leadership that will take it to the next level.
Yeah.
So we need to have these regular conversations on the importance of succession planning, on the importance of building the next generation of leaders. What I'm happy from this conference, I've seen quite a lot of people that I don't know. They're young, you see, which means there's something right we are doing in building the next generation of leaders.
Yeah.
And that cannot happen if us who have been in the sector for, say, 20, 25 years are not paving the way for others to come in.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely on the spot, because most institutions shy away from having that discussion. They wait until something tragic happens, and then they are running around now looking for a replacement. But on the flip side of it is that we need to have many of these conversations, because you could also find somebody who does exactly what you did,
and then the
question now is it too early to say I will leave in a year's time? Are you opening up all possibilities of all manner of shenanigans? Whether internally or externally, is your board going to understand and support that decision? So all these issues, come together. But the bottom line is that we really need to discuss succession planning, and we need to implement it, as soon as that opportunity comes.
And let me add one point. One of the things that I think needs to happen going forward is, through the center, like your center, is to have a leadership development program that focuses on building the next cadres of leaders in philanthropy, you see, such that whether these people are part of this organization or not, but if you're building their capacity such that when the time comes for one to move on, you have a big pool of people you can choose from. They can be from within or come from. I'm not sure if you are doing that already, but I think a leadership fellowship program specifically focusing on philanthropy focusing on developing the next generation of leaders will be something that will add a lot of value.
Great. So we're doing something close to it, not yet there. I'm glad that you are emphasizing the point. And so in our curriculum development and program planning, I think it would be good to think about that. We're doing something with a group called Aroxa. Innocent Chukuma established a fellowship that is meant to help leaders transition out, but not to help leaders step into the position. So we might want to think about that. But what's fascinating for me is that you then leave the Foundation for Civil Society to lead Trademark East Africa, but Tanzania, and then now you are focusing on the region, but you have stayed very much intact in terms of your focus and grounding on African issues. African philanthropy issues. I want us to connect that, but let's talk about your current work. What does the Trademark East Africa institution do in the region? I see you are in the ports, you are in ministries of trade,
You could, and listening to some of the conversations, you could even define some of the work that Trademark is doing as being philanthropic.
Yeah.
We tap resources, aid resources, from mostly from the northern part of the globe. But we utilize the resources to catalyze trade. Because the belief we have at Trademark is that one way of growing prosperity or reducing poverty is to enable people to trade, to create value from the things they have.
Yeah.
And in order to really enable them do that is first also remove any obstacles that they have, could be systemic, infrastructure, policy, etc. Remove the obstacles to doing trade, but also build their capacity to being able to do trade. So our pillars are looking broadly around those areas. So we tap significant amount of resources annually, could be to the tune of 60, 70, up to 80, sometimes $100 million. And we allocate those resources across the various countries. I'm responsible for the countries within the East African region, but I've done also quite a bit of the first 5 years, actually, only focusing on Tanzania.
Yeah.
And what we have seen, we've gotten quite good results around women empowerment, especially women in trade. We've got a lot of good results from private sector, especially private sector that are doing import-export trade because of those reduced barriers to trade. Listening to these conversations, I think there could be a lot of cross-learning between what organizations like mine are doing, but also what the philanthropic organizations are doing. What are the levers that we can apply in society to really create a bridge that will help communities move out of poverty?
Yeah. I mean, at some point, we might really want to maybe do even a masterclass or even a convening on this, because some countries have even moved as far as, you know, adopting principles like no aid but trade, right?
Absolutely.
Which means that there's a relationship between philanthropy
Absolutely.
And the notions of trade.
Absolutely.
Social movements have refused to receive or to be funded by philanthropy and donors, and instead have opted for trade
Absolutely.
As the safest way to support
Absolutely.
Their work,
Absolutely.
So that it doesn't get diluted
Absolutely.
Or captured.
Absolutely.
So I think Absolutely. I think you are probably one of the few people that could help everyone understand
Absolutely.
The importance
Absolutely.
Of trade. But you see, when you talk about trade, we don't even think about the infrastructure around it, which is your ports, your
Absolutely.
Seas, and all of that.
Absolutely.
And that's part of what you do.
Maybe because if you look at the, you know, if you look at the costs of any product that you buy, research shows around 30, sometimes up to 50% of the cost of that product is related to transport costs.
Yeah.
And if you look at transport costs, it's highly correlated to transport infrastructure. Where you have better roads, better functioning ports, etc., probably it's going to be cheaper as getting a product to places where your roads are horrible, your ports are inefficient. Now, so what we did as Trademark is to identify what are the major transport nodes that needs to be as efficient as possible. So our focus has been on the ports and on the borders from one country to another. And that's for the first 7 to 10 years, we did quite a lot of investment in addressing inefficiencies around those transport nodes.
Yeah.
But of course, the reality is in Africa, infrastructure presents a huge bottleneck. But also facilitation of the infrastructure in terms of what systems, how are you utilizing technology when things are moving across those type of infrastructure. So that's where also we are currently looking at quite a bit. So yes, our dream as Trademark, but of course also dream of the African continent, if we can enhance connectivity within the continent in terms of roads, in terms of airways, in terms of telephones, if you can enhance connectivity, you'll probably reduce the cost of doing business in Africa by at least 30%.
So does this, I mean, am I right to assume that you therefore work very closely with the Africa Free Trade Area Secretariat and these programs?
We actually have an MOU with the Secretariat of the AFCFTA.
Okay.
And actually, when they were being established, they came to East Africa quite a bit to learn from Trademark. And by the way, currently, we even have changed the name from Trademark East Africa to Trademark Africa, because now we even have presence in West Africa, where we have collaboration with the AFCFTA.
And then this concept of a one-stop shop border concept, how has it worked in East Africa? Because I know that in Southern Africa it was tried, it has proven very difficult. I would not want to get a sense of how it has performed here.
In East Africa, on average, we have reduced the border crossing time by 50%. In some borders, the border crossing time has been reduced by up to 90%. In some borders, up to 30%, but on average around 50%, where trucks that we are probably using, spending maybe 3-4 days to wait to cross the border, now they're only spending hours.
Yeah.
You see, that which translates into reduced cost of doing business, and therefore reduced cost of the products.
You know, another fascinating thing about you is that you serve in so many functions, and one of the areas where you've been serving a lot is boards and chairing a number of boards. I think currently you are chairing one of the banks.
KCB Bank.
Yes, KCB Bank, what has been your experience and lessons or even reflections around issues of governance in the continent, whether they refer to the non-profit sector or the private sector, Or even the public sector? I mean, the governance plays a huge role, and I would want to get your reflections at some point who is deeply engaged in that.
Success or failures of institutions is first and foremost a failure of governance. And when we talk about failure of governance, it's failure of leadership. So I think the challenge we have in our continent and elsewhere, we've seen failure of governance, even in the developed communities, and that has led into some global crisis. It's a failure of leadership. And I think the role we have in our continent is to develop a cadre of leaders that are of high integrity, that are of high intellectual curiosity, the ability to learn their stuff and move along, that are of high emotional intelligence, the ability to relate with people, the ability to relate with yourself, the ability to put the interest of the organization beyond your own personal interest. You know, people think because you are board chair, it means you can have all the privileges, you can take advantage of that position. I usually tell them no. You see, the board chair or board member of an organization, you're supposed to be the most ethical individual. And people will follow the tone from the top. If you look at the organizations that I'm involved with, either the board chair or as a board member, they'll tell you, I try to keep myself above any politics, above any conflict of interest, such that I make sure we follow procedures, policies, the laws, the regulations. And once you do that, organizations succeed. They might be facing challenges, but they will go through those challenges. So I think sometimes I feel like we are probably not investing enough to identify, develop, or nurture and reward those leaders. And when I talk about rewarding, it's not about financials. Yeah. No, it's about recognizing the African leaders that are creating strong institutions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think for me, ethical leadership is the defining factor into the success or failure.
Yeah.
I mean, into the success of organizations in Africa.
But this is the corporate side of things. But I also see you in the university space.
Absolutely.
You are a chairman of one of the universities. So let's talk about the education side. What motivates you to serve in the education sector?
For the last 10 years, I've been the chair of the University Council of a private medical university.
Yeah.
It's actually the oldest private medical university in Tanzania. And you can imagine sitting in a council discussing about medical, etc. But I think for me, again, it's that appreciation of the contribution that I could make in developing the next generation of professionals,
yeah.
Next generation of leaders. In Africa, as you know, we have a huge gap in human resource for health. You see, so for me, again, what I'm bringing, I'm not bringing any expertise on the medical side. I'm bringing expertise on governance and leadership,
yeah, yeah.
And to what extent universities or higher learning institutions can also be governed using these highest levels of ethical leadership excellence. Highest excellence of systems and processes that can result into achieving the objectives they've set for themselves.
Yeah.
And I've been the chair, as I've said, for now 10 years,
yeah.
And I'm happy with the achievement we've had over the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So what keeps John awake at night?
I think, for me, I tell people, challenges are my comfort zone. If I have something to solve or resolve,
yeah.
I usually tell people, you know, you're like a pilot. The trickiest, probably the most exciting, is the takeoff.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Once you're at the cruising level, you can have your coffee,
yeah, yeah.
Tea,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Now, takeoff. So for me, most of the organizations that I am involved with, I'm not saying they're still, none of them could comfortably say they are cruising level.
Yeah.
We are pushing them from one level to the other.
Yeah.
So that aspect of saying there is a challenge to be resolved, you see, and you do it with such calmness, with such confidence, with such dedication and conviction, and when you see that succeeding, you're saying, wow, this is... And to be honest, once I reach a stage where I think I've done everything I could,
yeah,
do,
yeah,
it's time to look for the next challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So let's land with where it all started. So what is it really that in the background, when you look back, you say, I'm who I am, I'm driven, I'm passionate about governance, I do all these things. But if I'm to look back, these are the different moments or different factors that contributed to the John that we're speaking to. But obviously, we're speaking to a John that has gone through different stages of life. Some people is their background, others is their parents. What is it with John?
A combination of everything. I lost my father about,
yeah,
3 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really, the period of the funeral, the burial, the mourning, gave us an appreciation and a moment to think of the contribution he had in our upbringing.
Yeah.
Not only as a father to sons or to children, but also as a leader to young leaders. You see, I could probably in my 20s, if not my teens, he would entrust us with responsibilities that probably have contributed to our leadership.
Yeah.
But the way he conducted himself, even when he had access to resources, he would always say, no, I have access to resources, but that does not give me the power to use these resources for personal benefit, you see. And we, you know, by then you're like, but... we are probably struggling,
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Why can't you just use
that? Yeah.
Exactly. And you,
yeah,
say, no, that's not how life is. And you grow up in that way of thinking that even when you have access to resources, ask yourself, are these resources your resources,
yeah,
or resources,
yeah,
for the organization?
Yeah.
So the parental, and I could say the same about our mother, a retired teacher. So you're always, when you're home, you're always like you're in an extended classroom of leadership,
yeah,
and life. So upbringing our parents, but also the people that I worked for. I could say the first 2-3 employers that I worked for really shaped to defining success in a correct way. That success,
yeah, yeah,
is a function of impact you're making to community,
yeah,
and not a function of how much you're accumulating for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I mean, I wouldn't end this without It's not a sad note, because this is something that both of us knew very well. In fact, I think when this happened, you were one of the first people to give me all the information. I always want to pay tribute to Ali, to Ali Mufuruki. And my condolences, to you for your dad's loss. I follow your page. On Father's Day, I saw the beautiful message that you posted. But you know, Ali really shaped a lot of things for most of us. He was a national of Tanzania, but he was always with us at CAPSI when we were established. And in fact, this last official meeting was actually to CAPSI. We hosted him for our dinner and that. So I always want to, whenever I meet people that knew him very well, want to end on that note. And so what are the lessons that, you could say, you personally, because you knew him very well, but also Tanzanians have and Africans in general, have drawn from the life and experiences of Ali?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I had known Ali for over 20 years.
Yeah.
First time our close engagement when he was a member of the board of Economic and Social Research Foundation, and I was a member of the management team. But what I had learned from him then up to the moment he dies, he was somebody of very high integrity. And it's a lesson that we can learn that you can have African business leaders running ethical business with high levels of integrity, high levels of intellect and intellectual curiosity. You could, anytime you get to engage with Ali, you are learning something new.
Yeah.
You see? So he was a thought leader, not only Tanzanian level, even continental level, global thought leader when it comes to leadership and business. I could say even my leadership journey, even in corporate and general leadership, it's a contribution by Ali. So what it means in Africa, we have leaders of great stature, of the likes of Ali. And Ali has gone there a lot more. I think as Africans, we should utilize them a lot more to learn from them as much as we can before they are gone. You see, and also get to write about them.
Yeah.
You see, to making sure the beauty about Ali, he had spoken so much. Therefore, to date, you can still listen a lot of video clips from Ali. So Tanzania and the continent lost a great son of the continent and of the country, but his lessons will always live on. Some of us, sometimes when you're doing something, you'll ask yourself, what would Ali have said or have done, given that situation? So we are grateful to God that we had an opportunity to live with him, but we're also thankful that when the time came, God had to do what he had to do.
John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure
talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That was John Ulanga, the Regional Director for Central and East Africa Trademark. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the CAPSI podcast series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.